Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, reviewing your comments on Twitter, Facebook, and checking in on the likes on SoundCloud, I know that many of you really enjoyed our programs on A Whole Life by Robert Seethaler. And I'm really glad that you enjoyed that, and thanks for the comments. And, still, we'd like to get some written comments in here. That's a big move to do that, so hopefully you'll do that now with this next book. So today what we're going to do is we're going to start work on our next book in our Around the World in Book series. Remember, this is our series for the winter, and of course next summer we're going to have our series called Summer of Classics. But today we're going to begin our discussion of H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. Now, it's really probably the most unusual book that I have ever read. I'll have to admit that right up front. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't read it. In fact, I'm encouraging you to read it. But most reviewers, when they get a hold of this book and they write a review of it, they call it a memoir. And I guess in many ways, I guess that's true. It is a memoir, but it's so much more than that. And I have just found it to be probably one of the most compelling books I've read, probably one of the most scintillating books I've read. It's, like I said, it was one of the most unusual books I've read. There are parts of it I really like. There are some parts I don't like, but that's the way it is with books. And you could feel completely different about that, and that would be all right. But to me, as a writer, and I think most of you that listen to JBL know that I am a writer, and I've been writing almost all of my life since I was about 23 or 24, so that gets into a long time period. And I not only write articles for the Trumpet magazine or for the Royal Vision magazine, I do my own writing on the side of, I do like to write my own poetry and things like that. But if you really get into this book, and it is kind of a challenging book that way, but Helen MacDonald really proves herself to be a great writer, and she really is a poet. There's a lot of parts of this book just come across to me as great poetry. She also, in this book, does a great review of medieval literature, and especially the medieval literature on falconry. And she shows some interesting things there that I never knew even existed. But she also proves herself in this book to be a nature writer. I mean, H is for Hawk is a fascinating bird book. And I myself, wouldn't necessarily go to the bookstore and pick up a bird book. But it really is this exciting blow-by-blow account of training a goshawk. And I had to learn how to say that correctly, by the way. You want to say goosehawk, but there's no G-O-O-S-E in it. It's G-O-S-H-A-W-A-K, and it's really goshawk. And so you really could call this book a modern, well, treatise on falconry, but it's even much more than that. And we'll get into that as we go. And you'll hear some more before we're done with this program. But I have to admit, for me, that it was falconry that drew me to this book, and it's probably a unique interest in falconry at that. And so let me explain what I mean. I am fascinated by falconry. Now, that's not because I plan to go out and buy a baby goshawk and train it. I have no desire to train a hawk. If you ever can see some pictures of goshawks, and there's not a whole lot of pictures in H's for Hawk, but if you get online and you look up some of the reviews, there's pictures of Helen MacDonald and there is pictures of her goshawk. They are really frightening creatures. I mean, they are like raptors. And one of the other instructors here at the college, I was talking about this book and I was recommending it to her. And when she talked about falconry, she says, oh, those are like the old-time drones. You know, that's what they were like. They were the drones of medieval times. You know, they didn't have the mechanical drones that we have. And so I thought that was actually quite funny. But here's why I'm so fascinated by falconry. And it really gets back to William Shakespeare. Now, you might think that's a really strange connection. But I think also most of you know, just by hearing me, speak on these radio programs, I do teach Shakespeare here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. And I actually teach two Shakespeare classes. I teach a sophomore class, which is just a survey of about four or five Shakespeare plays. But then I also teach a junior-senior elective on Shakespeare's history plays, and it's basically called Shakespeare's English Kings. And so I really do have this interest in Shakespeare. But Shakespeare loves birds. And if you look at the imagery in Shakespeare, he really does refer to birds quite a bit. And also, he refers to falconry or hawking a lot of times in his plays. And I'm actually going to give you an example from that. But there's a website that you can actually search into. It's called Politic Worm. Politic Worm, it's all small letters, PoliticWorm. And they have this great article up there called Shakespeare and Hawking. And article that they have there, they quote from an author, Caroline Spurgeon, and she has just a classic book on Shakespeare, and it's called Shakespeare's Imagery. And it's an older book. I think you'd probably have to find a used copy of it. I know I found one today on Amazon, and so I don't think you'd have any trouble finding it on Amazon or abebooks.com. But here's what this author has to say. She's quoting from this book. And here's a quote from Carolyn Spurgeon's book, Shakespeare's Imagery. It says, of the large animal group, the outstanding point is the great number drawn from birds. And she's talking about Shakespeare. It says, if we accept the human body, Shakespeare's images from birds form by far the largest section drawn from any single class of objects. And so she knows that Shakespeare does a lot of he uses birds for images, and he uses birds to explain things. She goes on and says, this author goes on to talk about Miss Spurgeon. She says, in her list of many images derived from birds, she notes the soaring of the eagle and of the hawk, the fell swoop of the kite, the confident flight of the falcon, towering in her pride of place. And so those are some of the images that Shakespeare puts together in his plays, you know, about birds or about hawks. Now, it's interesting, in the junior Shakespeare class, we are going through the series of plays right now on Henry VI. And if you know anything about Shakespeare, he has this tetralogies. And, of course, we're studying the tetralogies beginning with Richard II and it ends with Richard III. And it's really about the Wars of the Roses. And in the second Henry VI, there is this scene where you have these, you have people from the House of Lancaster and people from the House of York, and they are really kind of like very intensely fighting each other. They're vying for power. Henry VI is the son of Henry V. He is not the king that his father was. He really doesn't have what it takes to be king. He's not a very good leader. He's not a strong leader. And so everyone else that has this strength, or everyone else that has their eye on the throne, they begin competing with each other. And there is this, in Act 2, Scene 1, there's this scene of King Henry, there's Queen Margaret, and the way they describe the scene is you have Queen Margaret with her hawk on her fist. And of course, when you're into falconry, you do have to train the hawk to answer your commands. And here, I don't think it doesn't say that King Henry has his hawk, but Queen Margaret, or Margaret of Anjou, is her full name or her full title. She's there with her hawk on her fist. And then, of course, the Duke of Humphrey, or Duke Humphrey of Gloucester, which is King Henry VI's uncle, or he was Henry V's brother, is there. Then one of his other relatives, Cardinal Beaufort, is there, and that's his great uncle, who was known as Winchester. And then you have the Duke of Suffolk, and they're all involved in falconry. And essentially, the scene that Shakespeare is really setting up is all these people are just like birds of prey, and they're ready to prey on each other. And he's got this whole scene of falconry going on in the background. So it is really kind of interesting that Shakespeare uses this. And I know this semester we've been really studying into the kings, into these really kind of fascinating lives of these men. And a lot of them were into falconry. They were into hunting with these great birds. But I never understood until I read H is for Hawk, what it takes to train one. And it's not easy, but let me just read some of the lines of this poetry here from Shakespeare. And it begins with Queen Margaret. Now, for all of you that maybe aren't familiar with Queen Margaret of Anjou, she was one tough cookie. And she certainly had more ambition for power than Henry VI did. Henry VI kind of wanted to be a saint and just go to church all the time. You know, Margaret of Anjou wanted to rule, and she was really like this spy in the English court from France. She was from France. Her father was a prince, and, she was actually working for the crown in France to, you know, feed information to them so that they could, break all their treaties with England. But here's what Queen Margaret, she starts out the scene, she says, "Believe me, lords, for flying at the brook, I saw not better sport these 7 years' day. Yet by your leave, the wind was very high, and 10 to 1, old Joan had not gone out." And so here, she's talking about being into falconry. She's really into hawking, as Shakespeare would say. And, you could almost see that. She's like a hawk herself. And, of course, when Helen MacDonald begins to describe her goshawk, it's really quite frightening. I'm gonna give you some of the images that she writes about that. Then there's King Henry. He answers his wife, and he's looking at his uncle Gloucester, and Gloucester is the Lord Protector of the realm, because when he was made king, when his father died, he was 9 months old, and he's now the King of England. He obviously couldn't rule, and so his uncle of Gloucester, or Humphrey of, Humphrey of Gloucester. So he's involved with falconry. And notice what King Henry says there. He says, "What a point, my lord, your falcon made, and what a pitch she flew above the rest, to see how God and all his creatures works. Yea, men and birds are fain of climbing high." And so they're all like talking about their falcons, and these are birds of prey. They're out hunting for pheasants. They're out hunting for small animals. And instead of using a bow and arrow, they're using this attack bird to kill this, this innocent little creature. And so the scene is really quite dramatic. And then Suffolk, who is really in cahoots with Margaret of Anjou to control Henry so that they can control the throne, he's saying, "No marvel, and it like your majesty, my lord protector, hawks do tower so well. They know their master loves to be aloft and bears his thoughts above his falcon's pitch." And so here Suffolk is now taking a slice at Humphrey of Gloucester and saying, "Well, yeah, your hawks fly so high because they're like you. You're just so proud of yourself, or you like to be on high." And so they did not like the fact that Humphrey of Gloucester was ruling all these years to help his nephew before he could take over the throne. And actually, by this scene, King Henry VI is able to take over the throne, but Gloucester is still the Lord Protector, and Suffolk and Queen Margaret, they don't want him there anymore. They want to get rid of him. So you can see there's like this whole image of these birds of prey. And then Gloucester, notice he says back to Suffolk, "My lord, 'tis but a base, ignoble mind that mounts no higher than a bird can soar." And so there he's defending himself. Now, Winchester, who is was the great uncle of Henry VI, also he was the uncle of Gloucester as well, or at least they were related. He says, "I thought as much, he would be above the clouds." And so here Winchester also wants to rule England. And of course, he was one of the cardinals of the church, but he still wanted to get rid of Gloucester so he could rule. And he actually wanted to buy a higher office from the Pope so that he could be, well, in charge of all of England, even over the throne. And Gloucester knows, notice how he responds back to the cardinal. He says, "I, my Lord Cardinal, how think you by that? Were it not your good grace could fly to heaven?" And so they're all slapping each other. Well, what's the matter? Can't you fly to heaven? And he's really cutting him down because the cardinal wasn't very religious at all anyway. And this really comes out in the play. But King Henry says, "The treasury of everlasting joy." So here, King Henry isn't even aware of what's going on underneath the surface. But here, Margaret of Anjou, Gloucester, Winchester, Suffolk, they're all attacking each other like they're birds of prey. And so Shakespeare does use that quite often in his play in Macbeth. He does refer to falconry, and Caroline Spurgeon brings this out. And here's another quote from her book, and talking to Shakespeare's imagery using hawks or falconry. It says, "He has more images of riding and of bird snaring and falconry than any other forms of outdoor sport. In both these groups, there is evidence of personal experience." There are some scholars out there that don't believe that Shakespeare, who we know as Shakespeare, really was Shakespeare, but he was actually one of the royal family. And actually, if you understand falconry from medieval times, it really was a sport of the royals or of the aristocracy. It wasn't something that just the common people did. And so what Spurgeon is saying in her book is that Shakespeare's use of falconry shows that he was intimately involved in the sport himself. And so it just gives more credence to the fact that the man who actually wrote these Shakespeare plays was probably in the royal family. But she says she notes his use of falconry terms in describing Macbeth's guilty anguish. And it says, she's quoting from Macbeth. It says, "Come, sailing night, scarf up the tender eye of pitiful day." Now, what you have to understand, that word selling, S-E-E-L-I-N-G, it's the falconer's term for covering or scarfing up the eyes of a bird. And that's a big part of falconry, especially when you're training the falcons. You really have to kind of subdue them, and they have this hood they put over them so they can't see, because the birds are naturally afraid of human beings. And they bolt, and they bait, and they fight while they're being trained or being, tamed, you might want to say. But I just thought I'd read to you now what the New York Times, has to say about this book. Now, very few people today are into falconry. I mean, I don't think it's like this madcap sport out there. And like I said, I'm not necessarily into falconry just for falconry's sake, but I am very interested in it from, let's say, a literature standpoint, or just because Shakespeare uses so many images about it in his plays. But I have to admit, I found what MacDonald says about falconry, I did find it compelling. And in fact, there's sometimes the book gets so compelling you can't put it down. And I might be reading then until 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, because it's so interesting. But when the book first came out, of course, I think everyone needs to know that she did win the Samuel Johnson Prize and the Costa Book Award for the book. And like I said, it is really quite interesting. Here's what this Vicki Constance Crook says in the New York Times book review of books. And this is from February 2015. So it's been a couple years ago, but it's still, I think, a great review of the book. She says, as she opens up her review, she says, "If birds are made of air, as the nature writer Cy Montgomery says, then writing a great bird book is a little like dusting for the fingerprints of a ghost. It calls for poetry, science, and evidence. It says, in her breathtaking new book, H is for Hawk, winner of the Samuel Johnson Prize and the Costa Book Award, Helen MacDonald renders an incredible impression of a raptor's fierce essence and her own with words that mimic feathers so impossibly pretty we don't notice their astonishing engineering. And so I have to admit that was very impressive to me, not only as a would-be poet myself or as a writer, and even though I do write just primarily all nonfiction today, for the Trumpet and for the Royal Vision, you can still appreciate really good writing and really good. And there's certain poetry to putting words together, even in nonfiction, that is really good for the meter and the rhythm of an article. But it is, I think it's an astonishingly good writing in this book. A second reason why I'm so interested in the book is she has a lot of great descriptions of the English countryside. And I've had the chance to visit England probably more than any other country than in the United States. And I love going to England. I love being in the English countryside. And if there's time, I'm going to be able to read you a quote. But again, what Vicki Crook says here is that this book is really a memoir. And here's what the memoir is about. Here's what she says. MacDonald loses her bearings. After her beloved father's sudden death, she retreats from the human world. She's a poet, a historian, a longtime falconer, and for complicated reasons, she seizes upon a strange yet sublime prescription for what ails her. I mean, she was just devastated by her father. Her father was a famous photographer, and you can still see his photographic works today. And, you know, he did a lot of photojournalism, and he just dropped dead one day on a street. And they couldn't even find his car for a long time. He had parked his car and was out doing his work. And so she was really devastated that her father died like that. And so what she decided to do to help her kind of get over this problem with her father, she decided she was going to raise a falcon. Or not raise a falcon, she was going to become a falconer again. And she and her father had done this when she was just a young girl as well. The review goes on, she will raise and train a young goshawk, a cur of a bird to some, notoriously difficult to tame. And now she begins to quote MacDonald. She says, she's bigger, bulkier, bloodier, deadlier, scarier, she says, than any other hawks they are sometimes confused with. And essentially what the review of the book says is that, you know, a lot of people, when they go through some pretty serious times in their life or trials in their life, you know, they will take on an animal. And I know people that have gone through some pretty serious depressions and things like that, that their little pet dog or their cat just seemed to be hang around them enough. And it was really kind of a comfort during this time. And, you know, there are other people today, even that are older people or geriatric people that are, you know, having troubles, they will use animals. They'll bring animals into the hospital or animals into nursing homes, you know, to help people recover, and they're comforted by it. And so everyone knows this idea of the potential as an animal, as an emotional healer. But MacDonald's use of a goshawk to heal, it's really an incredible story. I mean, as this review from the New York Times says, it's messy, it's muddy, it's raw. And so it's not your normal animal as emotional healer story, but it still has that same effect. And so I'm running out of time for this today, but so we'll continue this next time. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/ just the best literature. And I do appreciate all the people that are liking that page. So just continue to do that. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.